This is Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Now here's today's program.
This is Faith in Action on Catholic Radio Indy. I'm Kent Blanford. In studio with me, Bridget Ayer.
Yeah, Kent and I are together again. I normally record this show with Jim, but well, Jim's on hiatus.
Jim went on vacation. I mean, after the successful auction, online auction that we had to replace our dinner that didn't happen this year, Jim needed a vacation.
Yeah.
And so we let Jim take a week or so off, and so I stepped in, and we'll take her from there and make sure we keep things going. But today we're talking to an archivist.
Yes.
What's an archivist?
Well, I'm not going to answer that, but I'm going to do my little intro too.
Okay.
Well, the hardest part of this interview is how to spell archivist. Well, actually, we are going to be talking about the profession of being an archivist, and not just any archivist, but the archivist for the Archdiocese of Indianapolis. And we're talking with the archivist, Julie Motika. So welcome to Faith in Action, Julie.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited about spending some time speaking with you.
Now, I have to ask you, I used to work over there in the Xavier Building for the Indiana Catholic Conference back in the day. And back then, I actually would run into, I think it was Father Joseph, and I can't remember his last name, but I think he was the former archivist back in the day. And I seem to remember that some of the records were on the fourth floor of that Xavier Building. Are they still up there now, or are they in different location, or are they all digitized at this point?
Nope, we're still up here. It's the third floor.
Okay.
But yes, that is still the location of the archive. So I have a couple of rooms up here on the third floor, and then I share space as well with the Christmas store ministry, who uses the other half of the floor.
Oh, okay. That's a really, really neat thing that happens there. So Julie, tell us a little bit about yourself, and what does your job as an archivist look like day to day?
Sure. Well, I grew up here in Indianapolis. Was a member of St. Barnabas Parish on the south side and grew up in the city. I attended Hanover College down in southern Indiana as an undergrad. And then after working in the library during my 4 years of college, I decided that I wanted to pursue library work as a profession. So I attended the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C., where I earned my master's degree in library and information science.
Oh, that's a great place out there too. I bet you enjoyed your time out there.
Yes, I really did. It was wonderful to be able to be there on campus and to enjoy Washington, D.C. in general and spend some time there for sure.
So what drew you then to this profession?
Well, after I graduated from library school, I ended up working in a couple of different Catholic college and university libraries. After graduating both in Massachusetts and in Pennsylvania, we lived outside of Indiana for a number of years. So, you know, I really got used to working in that environment of a Catholic institution in the library. I really just, you know, enjoyed the opportunity to delve especially into that local Catholic history and to be involved with that. That's been a really great experience.
I absolutely love libraries. If anybody knows me, I have tons of books, and I could just live in the library. So I'm somewhat jealous of your job there. Well, what kind of documents are you handling, and how are they filed? And you know, are your documents online? What kind of documents are we talking about? That, I mean, I would imagine there's a lot of them too.
Yeah, we do have a lot of documents here. Some of the things that we have are files pertaining to all of our previous bishops and archbishops. So I have their correspondence. I have all of their official communications, decrees they've made, the priest assignments that they've made over time. So we certainly are responsible for maintaining the files of bishops and archbishops here in the archives. We also have files for all of the different departments and offices at the Catholic Center. We retain a lot of their, meeting minutes for committees that they have, annual reports that they generate, but also historical materials like photos and things like that. So that could be different offices like Catholic Charities or the Office of Catholic Schools, those different departments that we have here. We also do have some historical files for all of the parishes of the Archdiocese, both the current parishes and those parishes that have closed. We're not the primary repository of historical information for parishes. Parishes are really should be keeping their own records, but we do have a little bit just so we can supply basic information to historical questions and kind of maintain a baseline level of historical material about all of our parishes.
So we're talking with Julia Motico. She is the archivist for the Archdiocese of Indianapolis. And is there just one archivist per diocese, and does every diocese have an archivist?
Well, canon law requires that every diocese has an archives. So whether it is a large space or, you know, for a diocese that is perhaps newly created, maybe they only have one room of materials, but they are required to maintain that space of historical documents. And canon law also establishes that the person that is officially responsible for the archives in each diocese is the chancellor. So in some dioceses, that is the chancellor's primary responsibility.
Okay.
In the Archdiocese of Indianapolis, our chancellor, who is Annette Mickey Lentz, she has a number of other responsibilities, so in those cases, then the chancellor is able to designate that responsibility for the archives to a separate archivist. So that is what we have in the Archdiocese of Indianapolis, and many other dioceses have that arrangement as well, but it really just varies.
So I'm really curious, like I remember back in the day when there used to be microfiche. I'm just curious. I don't even know if you know what that is, but yeah, of course you would. But you are younger, so your average younger person may not know what that is, but since you're an archivist, you do know. But what's the format, I mean, of the archives? I mean, are you digitizing them? Are they digital? Are they what? I mean, I'm sure they're in different forms. You know, are you converting them? Tell us a little bit about the forms of the format of these archives.
Well, we do have a lot of paper. and at this point, paper is still a good, reliable way to keep things that must be retained permanently.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about a format change over time, rendering that type of material inaccessible. If you think back even just 30 years ago or 40 years ago to the floppy disk, that was a very common format for storing information, and now you're hard-pressed to find a computer that can read a floppy disk. So we do keep that in mind, but we do have materials on microfilm and on microfiche, and I have a microfilm reader here in the archives, so when it's necessary, I can certainly access that type of material. We are trying to work towards digitization of some materials here in the archives. That's kind of been a long-term project of the archives. One of the things in particular that we are working on right now is to make accessible the back issues of the Criterion newspaper, as well as some of its predecessor newspapers that had different names all back through the years, and making that information available to people to view online.
I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, but how far back were the public? Do you have a general idea of how far back they go with the Criterion or prior to that?
We have some materials dating back to the 1870s related to newspapers.
Wow.
But some of those publications were short-lived and published sporadically, so it's not necessarily an unbroken line, but we do have newspapers going back that far.
So you had mentioned about, like, you're kind of the secondary record keeper of parish information. Do you ever get a situation where, you know, because it seems like the baptismal record or some sacramental records are very, very important when someone's getting married, and it's like maybe they can't hunt down their whatever, I can't find my confirmation or I can't find my record of my baptism. Do you ever get those kind of secondary requests they couldn't find it at the parish, and then do you have to go hunt it down? Does that ever happen?
I do receive requests that are like that, for sure. Parishes are, required to maintain their own sacramental records, and most parishes are very diligent about doing that. One thing that I have done in my work in the past in the archives is to help to train parish staff members in the good creation and maintenance of parish sacramental records. But I have found, by and large, that the people responsible for doing that are very conscientious and well-organized. That being said, we do have some copies of sacramental records here in the archives on microfilm. Back during the 1980s, they undertook a project to digitize sacramental records up through 1925. So that doesn't help a great deal for people looking for current sacramental records, but those are of great interest to people who are undertaking genealogical research to find more information about their ancestors. They are very interested in the pre-1925 sacramental records that we have on microfilm. So, but certainly when I, receive calls from people who are, struggling with issues related to their sacramental records, that's something that I can assist them with, in reaching out to the parish or trying to determine, where else that record could have been or what can be done to, remedy any deficiencies in the sacramental record keeping. So certainly I get a lot of questions about sacramental records and always very happy to help with those.
So what are the typical things that you do in a week, for instance? Like, what are the most common requests that you get? And are you mostly getting requests? Are you working on other projects in terms of your day-to-day?
Well, day-to-day, I'm almost always working on processing new materials that come to the archives. I am regularly receiving things, especially internally from the other departments of the Catholic Center. They are sending over old files from their offices.
Yeah, those, I got a question on that. At what point does something need to go to the archives? How old does it have to be for it to be coming to your office?
It doesn't need to be of any particular age to come here. We have a record retention policy for certain kinds of records. There are some records that only need to be kept for a period of years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years. So some of those things then, when they're kind of past that time frame, then they're able to be destroyed. But oftentimes the people will send me over records as soon as it's not something they're actively working with. So some of the materials are fairly recent, but if they are things that need to be stored in the archives, either for a period of time or permanently, then they are able to send them over whenever they're ready to do that.
All right, well, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, I'll let you finish the first part of that question of what kind of request you get or what you do in your normal day. So stay tuned for more Faith in Action.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Alexa, what's the weather forecast for today?
Alexa, what time is the Colts game today?
Alexa, remind me to pick up the dry cleaning tomorrow.
Has Alexa become a part of your daily routine? Then make sure that routine includes Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Quick, easy access to Catholic programming 24/7. Just say, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. I'm Bridget Ayer. Kent Blanford and I are in the studio, and we're talking to our guest, Julie Motika. She is the archivist for the Archdiocese of Indianapolis, and we were talking about, before the break, some of the interesting things that she does during her day, and one of the things we were talking about is that a lot of times, a big part of her day, she'll be intaking documents from departments that are done with their documents and they're ready to be archived. So we were talking about that they don't have to be any particular age, right, on those documents?
Yeah, that's right, Bridget. They don't have to be any particular age, but often what I spend a lot of time doing when they get here is taking the staples and paper clips out of things, that's a big process, but it's necessary to avoid rust on the paper. And then, you know, getting those materials organized often chronologically or sometimes by topic and into folders and into boxes. So it can take a lot of just kind of physical work with the materials to get all those things ready to be put into the archives.
You know, you mentioned, and I didn't even think about this question, but is there anything that you have to do, like you mentioned, taking out the paper clips and the staples so it wouldn't rust? Is there is there anything else that you have to do, like to the documents, to kind of maintain them, or is there like a certain temperature in the room, or you know what I'm saying, in terms of making sure the documents hold up over time?
Well, we do have climate-controlled storage for the documents that have to be kept permanently. We have separate HVAC in that area of the archives, and it's cold in there year-round. So we do maintain a good temperature. That's especially valuable for preserving photographs. But beyond that, you know, we use acid-free folders and archival boxes and things to make sure that the documents are protected to the best of our ability.
Now, you said you have you get a lot of intake during your day in terms of documents. What else do you spend a lot of your day on?
A lot of the rest of my day is often spent on responding to requests for information. This would be more kind of drawing on my librarian experience and hearkening back to my time of answering reference questions at the reference desk.
Mm-hmm.
So I do get a lot of questions. I receive questions from people working at the Catholic Center who, you know, want me to check on, you know, can you find a copy of this document, or do you know when this happened, or do you have any photographs of such and such event? So I do spend a lot of time responding to requests like that. And then I receive requests sometimes directly from parishes. It could be from the priest at the parish, or sometimes it's from an individual or a committee. Often I get requests for historical information when a parish is celebrating a milestone anniversary at the parish. So when they are having their 50th anniversary or 100th anniversary or whatever the case may be, they'll be wanting to gather historical materials because they're going to write a book about the history of their parish, or they're going to make, you know, a display or any number of projects related to their history. St. Joseph Parish in Shelbyville, that was a good example. They recently undertook a project to put a framed photograph of every priest who ever served the parish in one of the hallways that they had there at the parish. So that was a project that I was able to assist them with in locating a few missing priest photographs that they didn't have copies of. So I get that kind of request, and then I often receive calls directly from individuals, and many times they are looking for, as I mentioned when we were speaking earlier, they're often looking for sacramental records for genealogical research purposes. Genealogical research, you know, with the popularity of genealogy television programs such as Find My Roots and Who Do You Think You Are, that one,
mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the proliferation of DNA testing kits that are available where you can, you know, send off your DNA by mail and get results. This has really made genealogical research explode in popularity. So I do receive quite a lot of requests for genealogical research assistance here in the archives.
So what's the most interesting things that you have archived or either like had to look up that you've like found just to be really super interesting?
We do have a lot of really interesting things here in the archives. One of my favorite things is a relic that belonged to our first bishop, Bishop Simon Brute.
Mm.
It's a relic of the Holy Sepulchre, and I've
been
trying to think exactly what physically that relic might be, but it's a little brown speck in a reliquary that is a relic of the Holy Sepulchre. So Bishop Brute received this relic on a trip he took to France in 1815, which was actually before he was our bishop, but he had that relic in his possession. So that's a really unique item that we have here in the archive.
Talk about some other items that people might not expect to be in an archive. Or maybe they would, you know, if you've been to the Smithsonian, there's so much there. Anything else that comes to mind that you found to be really interesting?
Another really interesting thing we have is an umbrella. The umbrella belonged to Monsignor August Bessonies. And Monsignor Bessonies was the pastor of St. John Parish in downtown Indianapolis. He was the pastor there from 1857 until 1892. And he also served as vicar general of the diocese for many years. And we have an umbrella that belonged to him.
That's really super cool.
Yeah, I wish I could show you a picture on the radio, but I would encourage you to check out the Archives Facebook page, and I do have a picture of it there if you're interested in seeing what that looks like.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So how do you think you're helping people in our community learn about their history? And maybe what kind of response have you gotten from people that you've either served or helped, you know, process a request?
Well, one big thing that I have done is to create that Archives Facebook page that I've just mentioned.
Yeah.
And I have had that page since I began working in the archives back in 2017. So I share photos and other historical information usually a few times a week on the Facebook page, and I've gotten a great response to that. I have over 1,000 followers on the Facebook page. I get a lot of discussion back and forth, and people share their own memories and that sort of thing. So it's really been neat to see that and see that kind of community grow of people who are interested in the history of the Archdiocese.
So just out of curiosity, how do you get onto that Facebook page? How do people search that? So they go onto Facebook, and then what do they look for exactly? What's the name of it?
The name of the Facebook page is Archives of the Archdiocese of Indianapolis.
Okay, and I'll put a link to that on the podcast of this show once we broadcast it. I'm just curious, how has your faith been impacted as you've served in this role? I'm just curious of, you know, what it's like to really do that job and handle all those documents, and I'm sure it's impacted your faith. What's it been like for you personally and professionally to be in this role?
It has definitely had a pretty big impact on my faith. One of the things that I've really learned a lot more about working in the archives is a lot of information about the history and the life of our first bishop, Simon Brute. You're probably aware that we have an open cause of canonization open for Bishop Brute in the hopes that he will become a saint one day. Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad to be able to share that information. But certainly, you know, we've tried to encourage devotion in the Archdiocese to Simon Brute and to encourage people to learn more about him. He was a very saintly man. He was the confessor and spiritual director of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. They were very close friends when he was still living in Maryland prior to being assigned as our first bishop in Indiana. So it's really just been a great experience to learn more about him and to kind of learn, you know, he kind of suffered and gave his all. He was in poor health by the time he came to Indiana, but he rode on horseback all over the state visiting different churches, and he wrote to all of the priests, wrote letters to them multiple times a week. You know, he really gave everything that he had, you know, to support the faith of Catholics living in Indiana. So it's been really inspiring to me to learn more about that. But it's also been great to kind of see how historical issues that Catholics in the state of Indiana have faced in the past, you know, give a little bit greater context to issues that we face now in the Archdiocese. A good example of that would be, you know, to see, for example, looking at the history of the Know-Nothings in the 1850s. I don't know if you're familiar with that movement kind of in American politics. But the Know-Nothings at that time were very anti-immigration and you know, believed that the United States should be, you know, kind of fostering people who were native-born citizens, which, of course, their understanding of that was a little different than what we would understand, you know, Native Americans to be today. But because of their kind of anti-immigration policies, they were very anti-Catholic. So now we can kind of see, you know, we're living more than 100 years, 150 years in the future, and we face similar, you know, similar issues in our country related to immigration and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's just interesting to be able to look back at the fact that, okay, you know, people in Indiana, Catholics in Indiana, have faced some of these issues before. We've had challenges in the past. But, you know, we've been able to work through those things and to move forward. So it's just, you know, it can help to kind of reinforce your faith in that way, where you see, you know, things didn't all come to a crashing halt in the 1850s, or things didn't come to a crashing halt in the 1920s when the KKK was very widespread in Indiana. We were able to work through those challenges to our faith in the past, and, you know, we'll be able to continue to do that in the future.
Well, history, authentic history, does give us a good lens upon which to understand our current culture and how to solve problems. So you brought out a really good point there. I am curious, and we just have about 30 seconds left, how many documents are up there, roughly? Do you have a number? Do you have any idea?
I don't know that I could give you a number of documents. We have three rooms for document storage up here in the archives. So we have quite a large number of documents.
Well, Julie Motika, archivist for the Archdiocese of Indianapolis, has been a really interesting interview. Thanks so much for your service to the church, and thanks for being with us. How do we get in touch with you on that Facebook page?
It is the Facebook page Archives of the Archdiocese of Indianapolis. You can also go straight to the archives website at archindy.org/archives, and that has a link to my Facebook page, email, phone number, all the ways that you can get in touch with me and get further information about the archives.
That sounds great. Thanks so much, Julie Motika. God bless you.
You too. Thanks so much, Bridget and Ken. You guys have a good day.
You have been listening to Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a presentation of Catholic Radio Indy. You can hear this episode of Faith in Action again, or any past episode, at CatholicRadioIndy.org. If you have a suggestion for a guest or topic for a future program, please call us at 317-870-8400 or email Jim at CatholicRadioIndy.org.